Running with Jake, the podcast. On this episode...
Right now we're talking to Sat Bain's two-time Michelin star restaurateur.
Have you ever seen a zombie film? Have you ever seen a zombie chasing a person that's not a zombie? That's me.
Running with Jake, the podcast. Because every runner needs the occasional plot. And here's your host, Jake Lowe.
Welcome back to the Running with Jake podcast. I am your host, Jake Lowe. This is the place for your weekly dose of running motivation. Let's get you firing on all cylinders, get you out there, whatever you're up to. Old Boris has now slightly eased the lockdown, so we can get out there and walk the dogs and go and get on a bike and put our trainers on and have a bit of a run. So it's good times ahead, I think, to get ourselves feeling better physically and mentally. We've got a great show lined up for you. We are speaking to none other than Sat Bains. I'm super charged about this. This is going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to catching up with him and finding out how he uses physical exercise to get himself feeling better physically and mentally, especially as a professional chef, when clearly he's going to be flying around all over the place and he's got a team of 40 people to look after. So I'm super excited. And also, I want to chat to him about his Mount Everest experience. This is unreal. When he attempted to host the world's highest dinner party. We're going to be talking to Sat Bains about that and more later on the show.
You've not mentioned it again. You've not mentioned the fact that, yes, this is Sat Bains, the internationally renowned chef, one of the best in the world. Everybody knows all about Sat Bains, but you've not mentioned that you're related to him again. This is what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're cousins, but you know, that's fine. Actually, you know, one of the reasons I don't mention that we're cousins is he gets offended easily. So when I was personal training, people used to, some of my clients, you know, I'd mention it in conversation, they're like, oh yeah, you know, I really want to go and check out the restaurant. So they'd book, make a reservation, they'd go, and then Sat would come out of the kitchen. I'd normally send Sat a message saying, oh, a couple of my clients are coming, and you know, it'd be nice if you sort of pop out and say hello. So he'd go over to say hello, and then they'd say, yeah, oh hi, it's great to meet you, I can't believe you're Jake's uncle. He just gets so offended by that. He gets
really?
So, yeah, he really does. He's like...
Well, best not mention that to him then.
No, don't do that. He's a little bit older than me, but we are cousins.
I know, this reminds me, you're very quiet about things like this, and I think that's probably a good thing. I'm not sure. It reminds me of that time when we worked at that radio station in Derby, and it turns out that you were friends with Trevor McDonald, completely blew everybody away on the show.
He's not my uncle, but yeah, we were friends. We worked together for a short time. Yeah, I know, I don't like to mention these things. I forget, I don't know.
I know, but because I knew Sat Bains was coming on the show, and I thought that you probably wouldn't mention the fact that you are related to him again. What I've done is I've dug out some audio of you and Trevor McDonald, the old radio show we used to do, right? Here's a clip of it. It's a guy called Andy who we used to work with, and he found out that you were friends with Trevor McDonald, and this is how it went.
He doesn't show his emotions much on telly anyway, you don't see.
He's a bit of an emotional guy, though.
Is he?
Yeah.
How would you know?
Yeah. Well, I know him.
But I bet
I sound 12.
You know Trevor McDonald?
Yeah, I'm sure I've mentioned this before.
You know Trevor McDonald off the telly, the one with the short frizzy hair does the news. That Trevor McDonald.
Of course I do. I've known him for ages.
Oh, how do you know Trevor McDonald?
I used to work with him. Well, I say I used to work with him. I just had a work experience at ITN for about 3 weeks.
You were at ITN for 3 weeks? You never said.
I'm sure I mentioned this.
You never did.
I did, I'm sure.
You know
I did.
Trevor McDonald, right?
Yeah. No, he's a really nice guy. Good mate.
So there we go, your mates with Trevor McDonald. Who knew?
I mean, I sound 12 years old in that audio. That is just, I'm not even sure that's me. God, did I actually sound like that? That's mad.
Yeah, you did. It was 20 odd years ago. It's crazy, isn't it? We both sounded like kids. Right, and then what happens on the show, obviously no one believes you, and this is the way I remember it, is you phone Trevor McDonald up. You got your old Nokia. I can see it now. You're going through it on your phone. It's going beep, 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 beep. And then you tap the thing into the studio phone. And then this happens.
Hi.
How are you, matey? It's Jake.
Not too bad. Nice
to talk matey.
To you. Yeah, brilliant. Nice to talk to you. Listen, I can't talk for long. I've got to keep this brief because I am actually working this morning.
Oh, God. Delighted to hear it.
But I just thought I'd give you a quick call, you know, see how things are going.
Trevor.
Well, it's a big, big, big day for us. Last day for News at 10.
This was News at 10 when Trevor McDonald stopped doing the show at 10 o'clock.
And, it was a very sad moment.
It was a very sad moment, but also very bizarre.
I don't know, ecstatic or sad or what? How do you feel?
Well, it's a combination of both, really, because you know, it's a program with a great tradition, as you know, a great institution.
Sure.
But of course, I have a nice new challenge now, you know, to present the news at 6:30.
Trev, I've got to ask you, mate, what are you going to do with your nights now you've got your nights free?
Well, I'm compiling a list of restaurants and things I need to see in the cinema and so on. So if you have any suggestions, do let me know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you've been putting off going for a courier with me for ages. You've got no excuse now.
Absolutely none. Absolutely none, Jake. You have me now. you know, as you haven't had before.
Brilliant. Well, hey, it's good to speak to you again, Trevor. You take it easy.
Okay.
Thanks,
okay.
mate.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, mate. Unbelievable.
We are. I told you. You didn't believe me. None of you believe me. And I told you, look, I have his number. We're mates. And actually, we did go out for that curry. We went to, I think it was Boltley Towers in Burton-on-Trent a little bit after all his celebrations at ITN and stuff. Yeah, no, he's a good guy. He's all right. In fact, do you know what? I should reach out to him. In these times, these lockdown times, we like to reach out to our friends. I wonder how he's getting on. Mm. He's probably tinkering around with TikTok or something like that. He's probably a bit of a loose end, to be honest. I might drop him a message later.
You drop him a message. Why don't you send him to your cousin's restaurant, Sat Bain?
You see, this might be a weekly dose of running motivation, but we like to throw a few sneaky surprises in there as well.
Running with Jake, the podcast. Please use your podcast app to rate and review us.
Some good news for all of us. The tight grip of the lockdown is no more. It's been loosened ever so slightly. So this is good. It means we can get out a bit more frequently. We still have to be safe, of course. Keep that 2 metre rule. But I imagine lots of you are looking ahead to the future now, looking at your marathons in autumn, getting excited about them. Look, we're not going to imagine that they're going to be bumped into 2021, deferred again. We're going to stay positive, all of us. Come on, it's going to happen. Autumn. Bring on those 26.2 miles. But I want to talk about a particular type of training for a marathon that I still think it causes a bit of confusion. I get asked about it quite a lot. And that is, should you include training as part of a marathon at marathon pace? Should you do marathon pace training runs? I don't think there's a right or wrong here, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But there are some pros and cons that I want to share with you and give you some considerations to think about if you do fancy putting this type of training into your build-up for your marathon. Now, I believe that you don't have to do marathon pace training in order to complete a marathon. You really don't. The physical benefits that you get from running at marathon pace, you will get from running faster than marathon pace, so doing like interval training, for example. And you will also get the benefits from running slower than marathon pace. So it's not like you're going to miss any physical benefits if you don't do marathon pace training. However, some of the benefits, if the session goes well when you try this marathon pace run, it can increase your confidence. So let's say you want to break, let's say 4 hours. That's classic, isn't it? So you want to run 3 hours, 59 minutes. So you need to be running at about 9 minutes per mile. If you do some of that in your training, you go out there, you build up to, let's say, 60 minutes at a time. So you do a 60-minute run at 9 minute miling and it goes well. That's going to increase your confidence because you'll be thinking, oh, great, you know, I can do this. I'm getting my body used and conditioning it to running at the pace that I want to do on the day. So it's good for that reason. It can give you a greater understanding of your level of ability, which I think can help you to adjust your goal with logic, which I think is really important. Now, I'm not sure if we all do that. So I'll explain what I mean. If you go out there, you've selected a time, because let's face it, many of us will pluck a target time out of the air almost arbitrarily, like we're choosing a magazine off a shelf. Of course, if you're an experienced marathon runner, you may have a bank of experience, a wealth of experience that you can look at and say, well, actually, based on what I've done previously, I think this is a logical time for me. But if you are fairly new to the marathon game, it can be much harder. So let's say you choose a time, and we'll use that 4 hour example again. You want to run about 9 minute mile. You go out there and actually you're finding it really hard. And even though you build up and you're doing all the other types of training, you just don't feel that you're ready to do 9 minute mile or attempt it in a marathon. Well, because you've tested it in training, you can adjust your goal accordingly, which ultimately will give you a better experience come race day. It's much more logical, isn't it? Conversely, if you go out there attempting 9 minute mile and you're thinking, do you know, this is actually easier than I thought, and as the weeks and months go by you find it even easier and you're running even longer at that pace, then you might have to make your target a little bit harder. You might think that 4 hours for you isn't as quick as perhaps you're capable of. So one of the benefits of doing this type of training is you can adjust your target accordingly. I think it has the potential to make sessions more interesting as well. Now, let's face it, a marathon is an endurance event, it's an aerobic event. So we've got to do lots of running, lots of duration, lots of mileage, and a lot of it has to be at an easy effort. No matter what training plan you're following, most of the work you will do will be at an easy effort and an easy pace. And it can be a bit monotonous sometimes, it can be a bit dull, and it can be, I've got to do another easy run. Well, actually, if you're throwing some spice in there, so that could be in the form of hills, it could be like interval training, or it could be some runs at marathon pace. Just makes things a bit more interesting, spices it up for you, stimulates the mind. I think it also gives you a bigger hit of feel-good chemicals than slower running. So if all you did was slow running, you'd still be able to complete the marathon if you did the necessary training, the volume. So you'd still be able to do it. But actually, you're not going to get quite that same mental fix, that hit of endorphins, the feel-good chemicals that we get from running at a slightly faster effort, faster pace. So marathon pace can give you that over and above slow running. Now, it's not without its negatives. I do think there are some cons to marathon pace training that I want to share with you. I said that one of the benefits is it can increase your confidence if the session goes well. To completely counter that, if the session doesn't go well, or looking at it from the other side of things, if the session doesn't go well, your confidence can take a battering. So you go out there, right, 9-minute mile, I want to break 4 hours in the marathon, and you just find it really hard. It's really tough for you. Maybe the weather's not good, or it's hot, or it's hilly, and you just beat yourself up. It's going to have a negative impact on how you feel, and potentially the sessions later that week, and even the race if it continues. You continue to have bad experience of that session. So doing marathon paced work, if it goes well, can be good, but if it doesn't go well, I think it can knock your confidence a little bit. Now, if you're a social runner, and it's really hard at the moment, isn't it? Not being able to get out there with other people, missing your club buddies, no doubt. But if you are a social runner, when we are able to get back out there, if you are doing marathon pace sessions, sometimes that makes it a lot harder to run with people, because we're not all the same, as we know, different levels of ability and things. So you can get really creative with the session, and you can do things like staggered starts and out and back type runs and loops where you sort of pass each other. So it means that different levels of ability can be in one space. But if you've got, let's say, two or three of you like to go out on a Sunday morning, and you're really up for doing some marathon pace training, and that's either too quick for them or too slow for them, or it's not what they want to be doing at the moment, you can feel a bit lonely and a bit isolated because you're having to do it on your own. So it depends really on how sociable you are as a runner, but it can limit your flexibility of running with people. I think it's also easy, and something to be careful of, to select the wrong pace. Again, if you're not super experienced with marathons and you're new to it, and if you speak to any experienced marathon runner, they'll all tell you it takes a long time to really build that wealth of knowledge to piece it all together on the day, to kind of have like your dream race, if you like. And there are calculators out there. So if you just punch pace calculators into Google, it'll spit several back at you, and you can punch in a recent race time and your age and your sex and all that sort of stuff, and it will give you an idea of what your training paces are, and also your potential marathon result, your target. But it is a guesstimate. It can't be 100% accurate. It's impossible. It's a prediction. And anybody that uses or has noticed these predictions on like the GPS watches, where it tells you, oh great, you've ran a 5k in X time, so that means you can run a marathon in this time. I mean, it's a relevant kind of comparison in terms of performance, I guess, but actually, you know, a 5k compared to a marathon is just worlds apart. So it's not going to be 100% accurate, and I think it's very easy, if you're doing marathon pace stuff, to go out and execute them at the wrong pace. Something to think about. And the final thing, which I think is a little bit of a negative, and something certainly to be cautious of, is pace-based sessions, so like running marathon pace, isn't like intensity-based sessions, in that they can be determined by other factors. So you go out there, you want to run 9-minute mile, and you're out there and it's really windy, or it's really hot, or you're stressed out, you're not feeling great. Number of things could happen. And if you're really going for that pace, and right, I've got to run at this number now, 9-minute mile, that's me, that's where I'm staying, you could be working too hard. You could be working potentially not hard enough, but I think you probably could be working too hard, and that could have a negative impact. Whereas intensity-based sessions go on subjective feel. It's what we call RPE, so rate of perceived exertion. You may have heard of the conversation test, the talk test. You know, how many words can you talk or speak while you are running, and that can give you an idea of how hard you're pushing yourself. And that isn't determined by other factors in terms of weather and hills, because you adjust accordingly. So some things to think about. Now, if you do think that marathon pace is a bit of you and you fancy it and you want to put some into your training, I'm certainly not poo-pooing the idea. I just think there are things to think about. Try to make sure that the target marathon pace, so whatever target you have for your marathon, make sure it's close to where you are at the moment in terms of level of ability. If it isn't, so for example, if you've got several months until your marathon, then maybe if you go out and do marathon pace sessions, you just need to hold back a little bit, and you don't need to be running quite at your dream pace right at this moment. I think build slowly. You don't need to suddenly jump out the door and do 60 minutes at marathon pace. There's no harm in putting 5, 10, 15 minute chunks into an easy run, let's say an hour, and you're just putting a little bit of marathon pace stuff in there, build it slowly. Remember, you don't have to do it every single run, certainly, and you don't even have to do it every week. Not every week has to include marathon pace sessions. I think about you, your personality, your values, what you respond well to, what you don't respond well to. So if you go out there and you do marathon pace and actually you have a bad session and it's really going to knock your confidence, is it worth putting it in the first place? Something to think about. Make sure you do a nice warm-up before you do anything at marathon pace. I think that is really key. And just remember that it is a preference rather than a must-do session. You can still cross the finishing line, get that t-shirt, create that amazing memory and experience. You don't have to include marathon pace training in your build-up to that race. Some things to think about there, guys. I hope that really helps you. But whatever happens, I cannot wait to hear how you all get on. Train safe, enjoy it. Go get that medal.
Running with Jake, the podcast, your weekly dose of running motivation, out every Wednesday. Never miss an episode by subscribing now.
Right now we're talking to Sat Baines, two-time Michelin star restaurateur, top chef, all-round nice guy, and yes, he's my cousin. So knowing you, you've obviously already trained this morning. What did you do?
I've done a shoulder workout with kettlebells and resistance bands and dumbbells in the garden.
You are on it. I mean, look, I did mention this to you the other day. I was thinking, I mean, I spoke to Pete, the producer, about this before. I'm like, look, we've got to get Sat on somehow. It'd be wicked to get him on the show. We just need an angle. And then one of my runners messaged me and said, I think Sat started running, you know. he's out in Wollaston Park. I'm like, there you go. That's the angle.
Listen, have you ever seen a zombie film? Have you ever seen a zombie chasing a person that's not a zombie? That's me.
I've started running recently as well, accidentally, and I'm exactly the same. It's just like that. And it's really weird how you don't see people for ages, and then when you're out in public and you're running, they start seeing you, and they start going, oh, I saw you the other day in your shorts.
But what I've done is I started running about 4 years ago, and what I did is I tried the 5K usual Nike app, and I loved it because I could do around 34, 35 minutes, which for a guy 114 kilos, 6'2", I thought that wasn't bad. But I never ran. I hate running.
Wow, cool.
This time round, because every time I ran, my knees hurt and all the rest of it, my Achilles heels, I thought, you know what, why don't I just power walk? So I've got this 20-kilo vest, and I've been doing 10K every morning. So I've done 140K in 14 days. And I'm aiming this month to do 250 kilometres. The irony is, I'm not far off my running pace.
How are your knees holding up?
Honestly, walking for me is brilliant because I don't want to sound crazy, but the vest I've got does look something quite surreal. So people do tend to walk out of my way when I'm walking past them. But it's one of these, you've got this vision, you know, you just want to get your head down, you know your 10K, you're checking your watch, you're checking your heart rate, you're checking your time, your time in terms of hitting the kilometres on the minute. And I've got to admit, I listen to a podcast, Joe Rogan or Joey Diaz or whatever, and before you know it, 1:25 is my record for 10K. I thought, that's not bad, but I can do that consistently without the soreness the next day.
But you're throwing in quite a lot of different training at the moment, aren't you? I mean, I know you're a big gym goer anyway, which we'll get into a bit later. I know you're a member of David Lloyd Health Clubs, obviously not at the moment. That's the whole thing's been locked down, so we're all having to adapt. But I can tell you're so into it, because the minute I messaged you and said, look, Sat, shall we come and have a chat with us on the show? How's things? Blah, blah, blah. I've heard you've been getting active outdoors. You're like, yeah. Send me a photo of your workout. And I can see your route around Wollaston Park, around the lake there. I mean, obviously, you live in a great place on your doorstep to be able to get involved, which is wicked.
Obviously, in this climate, you know, you've got to think of people that can't go out and all that. So I thought, for me, exercise has always been related to mental health, it always has done. So for me, I know the hardest thing about going to the gym is getting to the gym. It's that mind game, you play with yourself where I'm tired and you finish at 1 o'clock at night before the restaurant. But you get up at 6:30, you get to the gym at 7:00, the feeling you have of euphoria will last you throughout the day. And that's why I can't stress enough. But you know, I've been going to gym since I was 15, 16. My first gym was Castle Gym in Friargate in Derby.
And if you cast your mind back to those days, Sat, because it's interesting. I mean, you're a few years older than me. I started my training around 15, 16. So similar time. And for me back then, it was more, if I'm really honest, and I think it's important to be honest sometimes, it was about aesthetics predominantly. I wanted to be fit and stuff, but as a young guy, that was more of my motivation. As I've got older, I've found that it's actually more the mental health benefits, as you touched on, and the cardiovascular fitness benefits, you know, prolonging my life. Have you always been focused on the mental health side of stuff, or were you quite aesthetics driven when you were younger? How did it start for you?
I was never aesthetics driven. I was always power driven, so I wanted to know what I could lift. So back in the day, you imagine a kind of spit and sawdust gym like Castle Gym. You know, it was brutal, but the weights were colossal, and the guys in there were all dormant, and it was some monstrous people in there in terms of lifting what they were. So you just, it was kind of like the Arnold Schwarzenegger era, you know, all the Dorian Yates and all that, where heavy lifters, not powerlifting, but probably bodybuilding. I think the showers were just like a room with lino on it, with like a pipe with holes in, you know, like a prison shower. But it was one of these things. And I think as you get older, you move through the times. And then obviously being a chef, we're known to do long hours and all the rest of it. So I thought, I love training. I had the bug for a long time. So really got into it when I hit 30. I thought 30, it's a milestone. Joined David Lloyd. So I've been a member at David Lloyd's in Ascot for 20 years. And I just caned it. And I love the cardio, I love the power. So I go through certain stages. I've got two trainers. I've got one Nick Warren at West Bridgeford, Dan Whittaker up in Mapley, and I've also took up Krav Maga about 2.5 years ago, and I do that on Saturdays, and yoga twice a week for the last 2 years. So I love the diversity, and I think it all related with your running, with your kind of power walking, with your training, with your kind of own goals, your eating. It just puts you in hopefully a good stead, especially in this time. The climate we're in is crazy, as you can imagine. It's almost surreal. So it puts you in good stead for situations like this, I think.
How has it impacted you in terms of training and work? Have you found that there's a connection between the two in terms of, we all have that daily routine, don't we? And obviously I know, visiting your restaurant, I know how busy you are, and it's go, 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 full on, you know, attention to detail, everything matters, meticulous, and the training sets you up, as you say, for the day. Did you find that routine that you had, now that's gone, how hard did that affect you? Did you easily sort of slot into a new routine? How did it work for you?
I think for training, it's important to allocate the time, because I think it makes you a better manager, it makes you a better leader. Because also, when you're being taught by a personal trainer, you're being told what to do. So I've always found that quite therapeutic. So when I'm being told a new move, a technique, a new kind of system on a circuit training, I'm being told what to do. So then I've always believed that allows me to better understand how to tell my guys what to do. Because if I'm still, you know, if I can still learn, that means I can still teach. And that's kind of like the kind of closed circuit that I look at it. But training for me, for work in the work environment, it gives you that. I normally get a lull around between 2 and 3 in the afternoon. So I force myself to go to the gym for a second session. And I'll tell you what.
Good man.
It's amazing. Because you come back, you're on fire, you've got your kick, your endorphins are in, you get something good to eat, and it carries you through the rest of the night. So I always, majority of my guys at work, they all train. They're young lads and girls, and they train, they run, and they've got a real good healthy attitude, especially in this time. You know, I'm keeping in touch with them all. I'm asking all what they're doing. They're all cooking at home. They're all isolated, but they're all training. They're all running. And that's they're getting a good mental state for that.
It's how it makes you feel, isn't it, at the bottom line? You touched on it earlier, that sometimes I find it where I'm like, oh, I've hit that afternoon lull, as you touch on. But if you start to think about beyond that, and you think about how you're going to feel once you're out there, once you're training, once you've got that weighted vest on and you're powering around Wellington Park, or how you're going to feel afterwards, that will get you out the door, won't it? It's not always easy, I think.
That's the key, is to put yourself in a mindful way into the future of how is it going to impact you for the rest of the day. Because you can have a lazy day, there's nothing wrong with having a rest day, but if it then makes you a little bit down and all you're doing all day is regretting that you never went, that's not good. You need to say, you know what, I'm gonna have a rest day today, and you don't go. But when you don't go when you should have gone, the guilt kicks in, then you don't feel good and you feel crap, and you think that's not worth it. So getting out there, you know, the fresh air, you know what, the other day it was raining. That was brilliant. There was a drizzle, you feel incredible, you're in nature. You know, I walk along the ring road for the first 5K, and it's just the motorway, but I don't see anyone. But the beauty is, you just head down, there's a drizzle on your face, you're getting wet, but you're in nature. And that's such a rare gift. I think that's what this period of time has really shone through, that we've all had to come up with ways of to kind of make, you know, use of our time. And that kind of hour, 2 hours in the morning of me training, doing my bits and bobs, sets me up for the day to make sure I'm focused, I can deal with stuff at work that I've still got to do, like suppliers and staff and all the rest of it. But if I didn't do that, I could easily get bogged down by being anxious or whatever, going, when we're going to open, what we're going to do, we're going to run out of money. Yes, all these things are serious, and people are seriously ill, and people are dying. We've got to remember that. But from a mental health and a health point of view and a positive attitude, I think that goes miles.
What you just said about nature there, Sat, really rang true, actually, because I've started a little bit of casual running recently, but one thing I've started noticing, not necessarily when I'm running, because when I'm running, I'm nearly dying at the moment, I'll be honest, but one thing I've generally noticed is, like, how beautiful the sky is when there's not loads of planes in it, and, you know, just like squirrels and stuff like that that I otherwise wouldn't have even noticed. Just wildlife and nature.
I think nature's coming, taking over, and I think that's how fast nature can recover. And it's like, my sister lived in Rome, and you know, there was dolphins in Venice right at the beginning of the lockdown, and you know, you can see the Himalayas from India now, which is unheard of because of the smog, and it's like, it's just so crazy how fast nature will just take over when it's untouched. But it just shows you what interaction of humans and how much damage we've done to the planet and are doing. It just, I think with this, with COVID, I think with the coronavirus and all that, I think what it's done is made everyone take a pause, reflect. You know, I made a decision this year. I goes to my wife, I goes, I'm not going to buy any more clothes this year. I'm going to try it for a year because I've got clothes. But you just get into a habit of just buying shit all the time. You're on the internet, you buy crap. So I've worked out that I'm going to try not to buy anything in terms of clothes-wise until I have to, and I'm going to see how long it lasts.
Cast your mind back. Let's imagine that you're, for one moment, not the Sat Baines that found training at 16 and turned up the heat and started to really smash it and throw himself into it when he hit 30, and you didn't exercise. What impact do you think that would have on your work and the way you are with your staff if you didn't do that?
So yeah, I'll be honest, I think I'll be screwed. I think, I really do think it gives you longevity, it gives you motivation. I wouldn't be the same guy because you wouldn't have them euphoric highs you get from training and from achievement. You know, it's all related to that kind of goal of doing something out of your comfort zone. You'd just be complacent, and I don't think then you would have got to the length, to the levels that you've aspired to. Like, you know, the restaurant's got 2 stars with the Michelin guide. That's not me. That's a collective of us as a team effort. But you have to have a vision. I think if you're going to be, you know, I've met chefs, you know, when I was training, chefs in their 40s and 50s, they look like they're fucking 80. You know, they look fucked. They were smoking, drinking. And you knew that the industry had taken their life, you know, they were, you know, like a victim. I don't want to be a victim. I want to work hard. I want to make sure the work I do is rewarding, and then I want to get rewarded for the work I've done by through fitness, and hopefully have a half decent life that I can enjoy the graft I've earned from my early life that I can enjoy later. It's as simple as that.
Listen, I don't think you have anything to worry about looking 8 years old right now, Sat. I mean, obviously you look a little bit like Joe Rogan. I'm sure you hear that a lot. I mean, let's be honest, that's a fact. How does your diet look on an average week, Sat? What sort of stuff are you eating to fuel your sessions? Are you a supplement kind of guy? You're hitting the protein shakes after training?
So I eat a lot of chicken. I eat steak probably once every 2 weeks. I don't eat a lot of red meat. Eat some lots of chicken thighs. I've been marinated, so I do a lot of marinades, and they're brilliant. So what you do, you get one of these freezer bags, you put a dry mix in of chipotle or whatever mix you can get, make your own little garam masala, whatever, leave it in there 24 hours, and then just pan fry it. It's brilliant. Have that with loads of greens, loads of veg. So in the morning, and most of the time I'm having eggs, have 3 or 4 eggs. I have cottage cheese, avocado, I have kimchi, which is obviously fermented cabbage. I take a supplement which is called, I'll tell you this one now, my nutritionist gave me. It's called Simprove. And it's a live and active, Simprove, it's a live and active bacteria. So it's got billions of bacteria for your gut health.
Which is a big thing. People are more focused on this now, aren't they?
Well, I think ultimately gut health is crucial because it kind of fulfills, you know, they say you've got 2 brains, one in your stomach, one in your mind. And I've been reading a book by Tim Spector, who's a doctor. on an audiobook, and he's also really big into this, and tells you he's done loads of experiments with twins, on identical twins, on how people put weight on, how they don't, what is it based on, and a lot of it's based in the gut. So there's some phenomenal stuff out there. So Joe, my nutritionist, is Thomas Taylor. So I take 70 mils of that every morning, me and Amanda do. It sorts you out in the day. You get all the good bacteria that you're probably missing out on.
I think that's a massive thing for runners as well, you know, Sat, because it's very common, the longer the distance, you know, it's a subject people don't like to talk about until it comes up in conversation, and then somebody says, oh yeah, that, you know, I've had issues with the toilet before in a marathon, you know, and it's not obviously not the best, but gut health is absolutely key.
So I need to ask you a question now. So this is pure...
Go, man.
This is pure... I think it's physiological or psychological, whichever it is. So every time I'm getting ready for a run, I have to go to the toilet, right? So I know it's a fight or flight, right? But then I have to go to the toilet again. And this is before I start running. So is that normal? Or is that just my body saying, get rid of all that before you go running?
It could be a number of things in my experience. Do you run at the same time, Sat? Or does it tend to vary a bit now?
In the mornings, yeah.
Is it pretty much bang on the morning though? Is it like 11 a.m. or 6 a.m. or can it be? Is it pretty regular?
7 o'clock.
Pretty much as all the time.
Yeah, it's either running or walking. When I go walking, I go for like one toilet. But then if I'm going for a run, your body definitely knows about it and says,
really?
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
And do you experience this when you're not running? Does it happen on a normal day? Is it just
no,
when you're running?
Just when you're running.
Do you change your diet? Do you have a different breakfast?
I have breakfast after. I always run on an empty stomach, yeah.
The night before, is that fairly standard?
It's just mad. It's like every time I speak to some of the guys that run, like work, they go, yeah, it's happened to me. And I was like, what? You know, it's amazing. There's something happening to your body that's either psychological, that says, you know, just to make yourself lighter, fight or flight syndrome kicks in, and then you ultimately can run whatever.
But look, this is the Running with Jake podcast, your weekly dose of running motivation. Do you need a poo now, or are you okay?
No.
Well, it's a good little test. I mean, if you feel all right, it's a good little test. Listen, I want to ask you about, and I'm gutted, because when we did meet up, it was a few years ago, and I never asked you this question, and I can't remember whether it was before or after the event, but what happened with the whole Mount Everest trip?
We did the trek, we went to Nepal and all that, and then we went through the China side, which was incredible, but amazing journey, life-changing experience. So we get to base camp, you have to acclimatise, you do a few treks for like 500 metres, whatever it is. But my breathing just wasn't brilliant. So I've never had great breathing in terms of, I've got asthma, I've never had asthma as a medical issue where it stopped me doing anything, especially like running, training, I play badminton for 3 hours. So it doesn't affect me like that. But there's obviously a lung capacity issue where I went to base camp, we did some treks, and I noticed that my breathing wasn't brilliant, and one of the doctors, the medic, he noticed. So what happens is the slowest person normally leads. So coming back down from a trek, which should have been easy, I was really suffering. So they're all going, you're all right. I goes, yeah, just, you know. So the medic goes, I need to check your stats and all that. So they did all that, and they realised I was suffering from pulmonary edema, which is water in the lungs. Unfortunately, the irony of all that is that you did your training. I went to Notts Trent Uni in an altitude chamber for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever I did. But because it's genetic, you can't train yourself out of it apart from going to a lower altitude. So what it means is your lungs are taking in water. So you're basically suffocated. But it wasn't serious. It was just early stages. So they gave me some oxygen for a couple of days. And then it was getting to the time where the window of opportunity was getting shorter to climb up the mountain. So I had to make a decision. I said, listen, I want to hold you all back. I'm going to go. I went through the dinner. They all knew what that to do. I goes to the Kathmandu, to Yak and Yeti Hotel there. But I checked in with the doctors first. Goes to the doctors, meet up one of the guys that organises the trip. He's got several restaurants out there. He's the guy that organises all the trekking up the mountain. So I went out for dinner with him. And then the next morning, I was supposed to meet his dad, who's one of the top climbers in the world. And I was really excited to meet him. And about 11 o'clock, the whole weirdest thing is like there was like a black cloud went in front of my window, which was on the third floor. And it was birds. And I thought, what's that? And then the lights went off, and obviously we were in the middle of an earthquake. So I think it was 7.3 or something. So we were there, and then everything just went batshit. And then I just got out of the room, saw everyone in the corridor saying, get out. all the marble in the foyer of the hotel. It was a strong building. It's the oldest building in there, the Iaconetti Hotel, so it's established. And I just went, we all went into the foyer to wait until the aftershocks and all that. So it was just very surreal. That's the only way I can say it. Talk about close and looking, you know. I was obviously... Wow. Someone was looking down on me that day, I tell you, it was crazy.
It just goes to show you've got to literally take every day like it is your last and make the most of everything, which goes back to what we were saying at the start of this chat, which is, you know, keeping that positive mindset, doing what you can to look after yourself, giving yourself the best possible chance to keep fit and healthy.
And surrounding yourself with really solid people.
So look, I've got something to ask you, sir. You know, I don't want to offend you here. You probably knew it was coming, but I'm loving the fact you're seriously into your training. We're obviously in lockdown now, getting out there a little bit more with your weighted vest. Maybe bring back your running days. What's the chance of you doing a marathon one day? Come on, man. I mean, I reckon you could definitely take Gordon Ramsay. No question. I would coach you. I'm happy to train you and get you up to speed. Can we see you do a marathon at any point in the future? Is that likely to happen? Is he still there?
That is no. That is a no. And it's an official... None of this all let me think about it. I am not built for running, trust me. Because I was running around the lake at Woolerton, I thought, I wonder what 10K feels like.
You see, it's a dangerous thing to wonder that, you see, because what I'll do, Sat, is I'll see a beer and I'll think, I wonder what that tastes like.
Well, I can tell you what it tastes like. I can show you what it tastes like. I'll serve it you. But it was the first 10K I ever did, and probably the last. I did it in 1 hour 15. I was very proud of myself, and I then realised that my legs were knackered. I've ticked it, and now I'm putting that to bed. That's as far as I'll ever go. That's it, done.
Well, look, you're very focused. You made your point very clearly there, but you do realise that next time when we get you back on the show, I'm obviously going to have to pose a question again, just in case something changes. Things change. Look, we didn't know we were going to be in a lockdown situation, and hell, here we are. So I'm going to have to ask the question again. Look, it's absolutely wicked to chat to you. It really is. I can't wait for this lockdown to be lifted for so many reasons, and we'll catch up in the East Midlands and come and see you at the restaurant. But
yeah, you guys stay safe as well, yeah?
Yeah, you too. Love to all the family, Sat, and we'll catch up again soon.
Speak soon, man. Cheers.
Running with Jake, the podcast, your weekly dose of running motivation, out every Wednesday. Never miss an episode by subscribing now.
This is the part of the show where we take one of your questions in hashtag Ask Jake. And Alison's been in touch. She's running her first marathon and she struggles with time, as many of us do. And she wants to know, is it okay if she breaks her long run up at the weekend into two shorter runs, running half in the morning and the other half after lunch? Now, in theory, Alison, yes, you can do that, in the sense that it's not going to come at an injury risk. In fact, the cost of injury, or the risk of injury rather, is relatively low because you're actually separating the run up. However, the important thing to note when you are doing this is the fact that you are missing some vital benefits. You're training for a marathon, which is an endurance event, so you need to put your body under similar levels of stress that you would experience in the race. And if you're running half of your long run in the morning and half of the long run after lunch, that chunk in the middle is the time that's given you to rest and recover. So you're losing some of those vital endurance benefits. So in a nutshell, I think the occasional long run is okay to break up, on the basis that most people don't run every single long run as part of their marathon training anyway, because something usually gets in the way. But I would not make a habit of it. And I think the key for yourself is to get clever with time so you can get those vital long runs in. I hope that helps, Alison. And of course, continue to download the Running with Jake podcast and we'll do everything we can to motivate you through your training. Got a question? Want the answer? Then don't forget, it's hashtag Ask Jake. That's it for another episode of the Running with Jake podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Myself and my non-running guy producer Pete will, of course, be back next week with more hashtag Ask Jakes, real runners with real stories, blah, blah, blah. I hate long goodbyes. I can't do this. You know, when people just drag it out, it's just so annoying, isn't it? Look, we're off. You put the phone down first. No, you put it down. Oh, and one last thing. Healthy is not a goal. It is a way of living. Remember that your health may be at risk if you do not keep up running or other exercise secured on it.
And on next week's episode of Running with Jake.
Talking to Paralympian gold medalist Ollie Hind. Ollie is a top guy. He's a British swimmer. He's gearing up for the Paralympics next year.
So I've got a pretty good test actually at home. I'm quite lucky. I've got like a rowing machine. boxing bag, and then I've got everything that I need for like my strength and conditioning.
So it's you that's bought all the gym equipment online then? Because I keep trying to get a hold of stuff and it just keeps saying out of stock, sorry, we're not, the shop's not open anymore. it's all at Ollie's.
Running with Jake, the podcast. That's a wrap.